Hello, welcome to the Ring podcast. Welcome to the Ring podcast. The podcast where I can't talk today for some reason. I'm Quiva and I'm joined by my friend Jen.
Hi.
There's a couple things I want to cover before we talk about episodes 2 and 3 of Ring, the final chapter. One of which is, these are currently being recorded kind of well in advance. We are still releasing them kind of slowly, but we've recorded a bunch over the last couple of weeks. I'm not going to start releasing them faster, I think, because my health's kind of up and down, how much energy and free time I have goes up and down. And also, like, when we get to novels, they take longer to get through than just, like, watching an episode of a TV show or a movie. So, you know, it's good to have a buffer. But part of the thing of that is that, like, between when we recorded the last episode, the Cerveza Cristal meme has blown up a lot more. So I feel like by the time that episode actually gets released, not only will you have heard of this, you will have seen it and have forgotten it already. So just in context, you're probably listening to these like well after they were recorded.
Well, you see, us explaining the meme is still useful in that case, because like they die so quickly now that you will have forgotten them, like you said. So
yeah,
it's useful to explain it again, so you go, oh yeah, that thing.
The other thing is that apparently the People's Joker is actually getting some screenings across the United States throughout like March and April. So by the time this comes out, those will, I think, all be done. So you won't, this isn't going to be useful for if you want to actually see that. But I guess I thought I'd mention it, considering I elaborated to last time that that it's not really possible to see that movie. Maybe the last episode came out in time for you to look it up and see a screening of it if you're in one of like the specific places in the United States on a specific date where it's going to be there. Probably not. Sorry. Not the last thing. There's two more things actually I want to bring up. Not relevant to timing. I guess the next one kind of is that like one of the things about running a podcast is that if there is like some joke or whatever blows up in relation to the ring, I get fucking sent it 20 times now. the current one is a joke. Someone just took a photo of like a TV that was hung really high in the ceiling in a shop and was just like, I'm gonna play the tape from the ring on this so that when the girl comes out to kill me, she falls and breaks her neck. And then people did a lot of like drawings of Sadako / Samara coming out of that TV in various silly ways. I have been sent this so much.
I was also sent it, not quite as much. I was sent by you and like a mutual friend of ours sent it to both of us.
Yeah, I exaggerate. It wasn't really 20 times, but I've been sent it so much that it's become annoying. and the last thing I want to bring up, which I forgot to bring up last time, is that there's a lot of different adaptations and sequels, and the web of how these all relate to each other is only going to get more complicated as we get on. So I have made something that I just refer to as the chart, which connects like every version of Reagan, all the sequels, and how, what's an adaptation of what. And I'm going to start putting that up on my website for the each podcast episode. We'll have like the up-to-date version of the chart for this, what everything we've discussed so far. So
It's going to be pretty simple at first when we upload it. It is going to get a lot more complicated
yeah,
as we go on.
I know if you go to at least the Apple Podcast website, there'll be a link on the page that will link, there'll be like an episode website link that'll link back to the page on my website where these are going to be shown. Other podcast platforms and apps or whatever may not have that link back. If it doesn't, well, sorry. But they'll be on my website anyway, which is oakreef.ie. That chart will exist anyway, and it's going to just get more and more complicated as time goes on. That's everything I wanted to talk about before we talked about the actual TV show. You don't have anything, do you, Jen?
No, I mean, my brain is kind of it's really hot today, and I have to turn off my fans to record. So sorry that I didn't say as much during this intro because my brain is just fucking melting out of my ears right now.
Jen is in Australia, if you didn't know. Sorry, I'm doxing you now.
Yes, I'm in Australia, and since Australia is, as we all know, an upside down, crazy backwoods land, we're currently in early autumn instead of early spring for the rest of you.
Yeah, it's still pretty cold here. I'm also wait. I'm waiting for like 2 dry days in a row, so that I can do a particular thing. Just some like gardening work kind of. There have not been 2 days in a row where it hasn't rained in like several months because I'm in Ireland. Think about Ireland is it rains like a lot during a lot of the year. It rains every day, but it doesn't actually rain necessarily that much. So like if you go out, you probably won't get wet, or you can plan around it. But the ground is never dry. It just never has the time to fully dry out because it's just gonna rain a little bit again. It's annoying. Anyway, that's the weather.
Yes. Sorry, we've gotten very sidetracked before we even started this episode.
Look, I'm trying to get an appointment for an ADHD assessment. It's been pushed out till April.
I am also trying to get an appointment for an ADHD assessment, so that's why we're like this, listener.
They won't give us the drugs. Please, I can be trusted with medicinal speed.
I feel less bad about how much we ramble the show now that I've remembered that we are both unmedicated ADHD havers.
Oh, anyway,
Episodes 2 and 3 of The Ring, final chapter.
yeah, there's a funny unimportant thing, which is the intro is for this show, which didn't show up in episode one. It's just like it's the footage of the excavator from episode one digging up the well, but with the colors inverted, and I just find that kind of funny.
It's because it's spooky.
Yeah, it's
You
spooky.
invert the colors. It's a spooky excavator.
But yeah, the cliffhanger at the end of the first episode is Asakawa sees the clerk at the resort dead and realizes that the cursed music video is actually real.
Right, and this episode picks up directly from that immediate.
Yeah, so Asakawa, he calls the cops, reports that the clerk is died of a heart attack, takes the tape and leaves. And like when he shows up for work the next day, there's just a cop waiting for him to ask about. He's like, hey, How did you know this guy died of a heart attack? Why did you run away? That's kind of weird.
Yeah. We also see the other big part of the cliffhanger that we're ending on, which is the interview with the professor for the
Canada, I
curse
think.
the Kaneda. As a Kaneda, we're seeing there the time is coming for when the curse is supposed to kill him, and the lights suddenly cut out.
Well, the stage lights suddenly light up really strong and bright and blind him. Then the power cuts, and then when the lights come back up, he's dead. And we're told a little later on that there's marks around his neck, so it looks like he's been strangled.
Mysterious.
Yeah. And in the kind of, I guess the almost the C plot for the episode is Miyashita goes back into her lab in the morning for work. She's a cancer researcher, by the way. I don't think we specified that last time. And she finds all her lab mice are dead, and she puts herself into quarantine because of, a possible virus outbreak. It's just like the Ring Terrace realm.
Per quarantine rules, she has been restricted to the top floor. She cannot go to the cafeteria to get food.
Yes.
She has to stay on the top floor to cool off her hot head.
Exactly. So she's just hanging out in a lab full of dead mice.
And I guess the D plot, or I guess this is part of the B plot, the police also show up to our good friend and extremely overly dramatic person, Ryuji.
Yeah, just I don't know, the way the actor plays him is great, because he's just like incredibly intense about everything. He's like,
Oh, there's.
no matter what he's saying, he's just staring whoever he's talking to down at all times.
I love this version of Ryuji. His scenes are my favorite part of the show so far. Just every scene he's in is great.
Yeah. So yeah, the cops ask him like where he was when the professor dies, and he has no alibi. I think he just says he was at home. He insists that, oh, I just put a curse on him. That's not a crime. But like, you're admitting, you're saying you put a curse on him and that killed him. Like, okay, cursing people technically not a crime, but like, driving isn't a crime. But if you ram someone with your car and deliberately say you're like, I'm going to hit you with my car beforehand, that's still murder. Just because you were driving, and driving is legal, doesn't make killing someone fine. I mean, like, fair enough, no one believes that it was actually a curse, and they think he like had some other secret plot going, but like, you're still saying you killed him.
Just to elaborate what I mean on like Ryuji's performance, throughout this whole scene where he's being interviewed with the police, he never looks at them. He's always just looking dramatically off into the middle distance the whole scene.
Yeah, sorry, he's not always staring someone down, but he is always staring intensely somewhere.
That's the thing. He almost never looks at people. He's always looking off dramatically into the middle distance, and it's just part of his whole overdramatic performance.
Yeah, the cops also talked to the woman who was presenting the TV show, and she is able to like relate all of Ryuji like stalking and intimidating Kaneda, because he told her as well. So the cops know he's been like stalking him and le leaving intimidating phone calls as well.
Yeah, there's There's like no way that like it doesn't just look like he murdered this man.
The most guilty man in existence.
Whether via curse or just elaborate murder plot.
Yeah, in the kind of main part, the cop who interviews Asakawa just kind of let him go afterwards, because there's not really anything to implicate Asakawa in the guy having a heart attack. It's just kind of weird. He just behaved kind of weirdly. Asakawa himself is kind of starts now that he's like, oh shit, this curse is real. I'm going to die. This is actually extremely serious. Starts being a lot more aloof and cold towards Yoshino. He like starts refusing to explain anything he's looking into, and keeping her at arm's length about everything.
He does kind of push Yoshino into, she wants to do an investigation on the rumor of the cursed music video.
Yeah.
He kind of pushes her into, like, nudges her towards researching that to see if he can like get any information on the on lifting the curse.
Yeah,
But he doesn't.
he's ordering her to investigate things that will be useful to him, but not telling her why, and kind of making claims that it's just for her. Like, oh, this will be good for your article. And she's like, okay, I can do this survey. And he's like, no, that'll take too long, and then makes up an excuse of like, oh, you know, these rumors are very short-lived. If you take too long to do this, then the interest will be gone, so you need to do something faster. But obviously he's doing it because he's going to die in 12 days.
It's a little manipulative, although he's still like a lot more likable than a lot of other adaptations of Asakawa.
Yeah, but like, they've showed already that he can be warm, and this is him reacting to like life-threatening circumstances. And it like this is not just him being an asshole. This is played for drama in a very deliberate way. Especially in episode 3. When we get to that. Yeah, he also Yoshino was staying over at his place to babysit Yuichi when he goes to the resort. So he drives her to work in his Jeep, the Yuichi special, the next morning. But he makes her get out before they arrive at the office, so nobody will see them going into work together. So someone actually does see her getting out of the Jeep and asks who was she getting a lift from, and she says, "Oh, that's just my boyfriend." There's also a bit where she almost walks in on him reviewing the tape in like an office in the newspaper, and he like jumps in front of the TV and spreads out his jacket in front of it to block the view, and then refuses to tell her what he's doing.
There's definitely like an element of like comedy to Asakawa, the way Asakawa performs some scenes, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how intentional it is, but
Yeah. And then eventually, Asakawa decides to go ask Ryuji about curses because he seems to be like the most prominent, or he's like, you know, he's prominent on the news at the moment for cursing a guy to death. So he's just like, okay, might as well ask this guy.
he goes up to Ryuji's apartment, which is marked with a triangle on the window for reasons I'm not sure.
I think if you look at the outside shots, multiple windows are marked with that. I don't think it's his specifically. I don't know what the red triangle is about, though.
If this is some like cultural thing, listener, let us know.
Yeah, hold on. I have the episode up here. You can see on the exterior shot that the window below his also has the triangle on it. I'm just sending a screenshot to Jed. I don't know if it's like a red triangle with the point at the top. I have no idea why it's on the windows, but yeah. This is not relevant to anything. This is just something,
No,
this is just a pointless detail we have become obsessed with for no reason.
again, sorry, two unmedicated ADHD people hosting the show. So yeah, Asakura goes up to Ryuji's apartment. When he walks in, Ryuji, in typical fashion, is sitting in darkness with his eyes closed and his arms crossed dramatically.
And he tries to prove his like psychic abilities to Asakawa by doing a really obvious magic trick to him.
Yeah, he does like the classic. He gives him like three like little pieces of paper to choose from, and he gives him like another piece of paper like before he chooses, and when he opens it up, it says like the number he's marked for the one he chose.
Yeah, but it's done in such a way of like he gives Asakawa a piece of paper with a number on it, and then he's like, okay, he has one, two, and three, and he says, okay, pick one of these. And Asakawa picks like two. He's like, okay, remove that, and then he's like, pick again. And Asakawa picks one. And he's like, okay, remove that. The one that's left. Look at the number I wrote in the piece of paper. It's three, and then there's a scene later on where he's with Yoshino at home, and they like go through the trick, and they kind of realize, oh wait, if I had picked three first, he would have just said to look at the paper then. It and if I picked three second, he would have said to look at it then and been like, that was your number, because he knew what was on the paper, so he could have manipulated. It's really obvious. But
It's such a basic magic trick, and it's so funny that this is what Ryuji uses to trick Asakura that he has powers, and it seemingly works up until Asakura goes home and like runs through it.
Asakawa leaves the tape with Ryuji to watch. And then after they figure out the magic trick, he gets really pissed off, and he like calls Ryuji and tells him, you're just a liar, whatever, I don't want your help. But he also doesn't want to die, so he does end up actually just going back to Ryuji eventually anyway. Which is reasonable. And when he goes back to Ryuji the second time, Ryuji has done a fucking
Oh boy.
CSI ass enhancement on the tape to reveal the secret footage inside the footage.
This scene drove me fucking insane. So it turns out what Ryuji has discovered with his brilliant computer knowledge that he also has, I guess, is that the ring tape as we know it does actually exist in the cursed music video, but it's hidden underneath the music video. Like the he points out like a slight glow in the like center of the frame, and then
Which I
like a
don't think is even
little.
there the first time they show it. I think that's only there when he's doing this demonstration, but
Yeah, and then like a little textbook pops up saying analyzing with a progress bar, and when it's done, there's just like footage of a baby underneath, and it was just, and there's also audio of the baby crying, which I
yeah.
guess was under the sound question mark.
Yeah. It is the footage is mostly like it is in the novel, but with the addition of the hairbrushing from the famous hairbrushing from the movies.
Sadly, the mirror does not move in this one. It's just a static image, but.
And that's the reveal of the curse tape as we know it being magically hidden with CSI nonsense under the music video is kind of is the ending for episode two.
It's subliminal.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's very silly. I will say part of the reason I wanted to do episode one on its own was I wanted your indignant reaction to the music video thing before it got maybe a bit diffused by the stupid revelation that it the cursed tape is also there underneath it.
I don't think it's defused it. It's just because it's still absolutely insane that they made it a music video to me. And now just like the actual ring tape being hidden by CSI like cyber bullshit is just an extra layer onto this.
Yeah, so in episode three, then Ryuji puts a copy of like the decoded video on a CD and gives it to Asakawa. So Ryuji is actually the one who has made a copy here. So I guess that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where that ends up going. Peek behind the scenes, listeners. You have seen this show before, but I am watching it for the first time as we go along. So,
I have watched it before, but I've also seen so many. I also have watched so many fucking versions of this story at this point that I am a bit fuzzy on a lot of the details from this one.
that's fair. After going through all of these adaptations of the original novel myself, I can understand completely how it kind of becomes a story mush in your brain after a while.
Yeah, there's also a scene in the episode two. I think after Asakawa gives the tape to Ryuji, there's a bit where Yoshida or where Yoichi like runs through the living room with a tape and starts to put it in the VCR, and he has like a fucking panic attack over it and grabs the tape off him before realizing it's just like a normal tape.
Yeah, they do a little fake out on you.
Yeah. Which is like if you think about it, or if he was thinking about it, he's already given the tape away, but he's obviously being very anxious about this because it's his fucking son. So it's yeah, but it's reasonable, but it's yeah, like you e even before even if you think, oh, this is an obvious fake out or whatever, like logically you can also know this can't actually be the tape, which I think is not or I think is. Good, actually.
If you're like familiar with The Ring, which like by this point the famous movie had come
Yeah.
out, so like people were like you know that like in most other adaptations of the story, his child and wife do end up getting cursed. So like I can see it fooling someone for a second if you don't like remember that he doesn't have the tape at home.
Yeah. So part of the plot then for this episode three, is trying to figure out like how the cursed video got mixed in with this broadcast of a music video. So Yoshino is tracking down info on all the rumors about Nao Matsuzaki. And
Again, real life human now,
real
Matsuzaki.
life singer, and she's like in contact with her publicist and stuff like that. They're helping her because they want to kind of quash the rumors that their fucking singer's music video is killing people. Because it's something you wouldn't think you'd want your singer to, your performer to be associated with. So Asakawa kind of uses Yoshino's contact then, I think, to kind of talk to find out the details of like when the video was broadcast, and talks to like I guess like TV the TV station, where I don't know how they know which particular broadcast of the music video is on the tape, but they seem to know exactly which one it is somehow. I might have just missed a detail there.
I'm not sure.
The guy explains to Asakawa that the images could be combined by like two broadcasts being broadcast on the same frequency. So, like, the music video and a pirate broadcast could have happened at the same time and mixed the signals together, which is not really how that works, but that's the explanation that we're going with here.
Sadako's curse has unintentionally made a new efficient form of video storage where you can put two videos together on the same broadcast.
Yeah. Yeah, she's gonna get a job in video compression. Yeah, I originally watched a I don't know where the subtitles are coming from in the version we're watching at the moment, honestly. I don't know who subtitled it, but the first time I watched this show, I watched it with a recording of a Singaporean TV channel, Channel 8's broadcast of it. And their English subtitles left a lot to be desired sometimes. I have a few screenshots of it saved of like just funny bits from it. And one I was very fond of was that they referred to like the pirate broadcast idea as illegal electromagnetic waves. Which I think we should all ad adopt instead of saying pirate broadcast now, just illegal electromagnetic waves. So in after kind of looking into this, Asakawa goes to see Miyashita. Because she's been left out of quarantine. There was no sign of any new virus being found or any virus being found. They still don't know why all the rats died at the same time, but it's fine, don't worry about it.
They do know that they all died of heart attack, which.
Yes. Which yeah, that's probably going to be relevant. But he goes to her and she does like a full like checkup and like CAT scans and stuff on him. Again, she's a cancer researcher. I feel like this is not her actual area of expertise, but he asks her to like just like check out his general health and see if there's any signs of anything that, you know, hey, is there anything that might indicate I'm about to suddenly die? And she's just like, no, you seem fine. Why are you asking this? And he's just like, no reason. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
You know, it's kind of fucked up that rats can be killed by what I'm assuming is the curse. It's not confirmed in the episodes we watched, but like,
Yeah.
it's kind of fucked up that animals can be killed by the curse. Because like, how the fuck is an animal gonna copy a VHS tape? Just seems unfair.
Me trying to explain to my cat, no, you have to hit the record button, please. You're going to die. Putting treats on the record button on my VHS player to try and make the cat like lick it hard enough to press the button. So while all this is happening, there's a few cuts throughout the episode of like Yoichi in school. He's not even really doing anything, but they like just the camera angles and the framing and the music seem to imply something bad or creepy, even though nothing is really happening.
There's like a few scenes throughout the show. I don't know if we've brought them up before, but there's like a few scenes where like Yoichi will just be like staring at someone like kind of creepily. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah,
I'm sure that'll
I think there's
probably
a
be
bit in
explained.
the first episode where like he looks at a TV that's turned off, but he has like a kind of a flashback of seeing the guy on the motorcycle die because he was there for that, and that's like reasonably just a very traumatic thing for a very small child to see.
And in the second episode, like when they're like watching on TV the death of the like professor, he's also like there staring around a corner at it kind of creepily.
Yeah, Yoshino is watching it on TV, and Yuichi is kind of secretly behind her watching it too, but she doesn't know that. But yeah, Yuichi ends up wandering out of school. He
He
has
like
like, oh yeah.
he walks away from like all of the kids like standing by a water drop together, and they're all like brushing their teeth and gargling at the water together. It's kind of strange,
Yeah, don't worry about it.
but okay. Normal school behavior, I guess.
He wanders off. He finds a payphone, and he has like the number of the radio station where, or sorry, the newspaper where, I'm getting mixed up with the fucking other adaptation again now.
Like I said, it all becomes like story mush in your brain after a while. Is this the one where Ryuji is trans or not? You have to remind me.
It's like the hero's journey. It's like it's the monomyth, except the monomyth is the fucking ring. So yeah, Yoichi has the phone number where his dad works, and he rings it. And Asakawa isn't there, but Yoshino is, and she realizes it's Yoichi calling, but he like collapses from the cold, in the phone booth he then, and but she can hear in the background that he's at a train station, and she rushes out and finds him and brings him to hospital.
This is at the time that Asakawa is getting his like scans and stuff, which is why he's not like there to do it.
Yeah, and after he gets out of that, he finds out what's happening and rushes to the hospital. And he finds that Yuichi is kind of physically okay now, but he's seems to be a bit like traumatized and not doing well. And Yoshino at this point just kind of, she had kind of comment she had kind of already started to like notice and comment on the fact that he's kind of being distant but very demanding of her, and she kind of cracks here and like demands that he tell her what's going on, and he just completely stonewalls her and refuses.
Yeah, he tells her like I'll tell you when the time is right, but yeah, he still doesn't give up about the curse yet.
And apparently when Yuichi collapsed, he like whispered to, or was it when he woke up? Either way, he whispered to Yoshino to tell her to save Papa. And she kind of tells him this and is like, Yuichi needs, even Yuichi is worried about you, please let me help, and he still refuses. And he eventually Yuichi asks to go home, and he takes him home against the objections of a nurse at the hospital.
Back at the apartment, it's nighttime now, and Asakara is he's looking at the tape on his computer when he notices screen going to black every couple of seconds.
Yeah, he starts like frame by frame going over it. And yeah, he.
This bothered me a little because the parts where like the like it, it's as if you've listened to previous episodes, you know that the screen going to black is the blinking like from the novel
Yeah.
where But the parts where the screen cuts to black are on the music video, not in the hidden footage. Which did Sadako see this music video? Was she there when this was filmed?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
But yeah, he notices the blinking thing, and he's the one who brings it to Ryuji in this version of it. And he's like trying to figure out, okay, if this is someone's like eyes and rather than a camera, what's going on here and how does this work with the pirate broadcast signal? And Ryuji's just like, oh, you think there was a pirate broadcast? That's not what's going on here. He says with absolute. Oh, yeah. So Ryuji also kind of like, at some point in all this, also like, basically lays out the, oh, yeah, I didn't kill Kaneda, but this is definitely how I actually did it. With like talking about like, oh, I was pestering him to, I was like harassing him over the phone. So his reaction was that to obviously get like his house security beefed up. So therefore, when they installed the house security, if someone was, in on it, they could have set up shit with the breaker or whatever the fuck it was. Which may not actually, that we actually we find out then that may not actually be what happened because he's like making it sound like he did murder him in a specific way, but then also during the episode,
Yeah, we find out that the actual way that he did the murder was far stupider.
yeah, Nagao gets a copy of the tape of Kaneda dying off the cops because they want a doctor to look over it and give their opinion on it. And he gives it to Miyashita because she's the only practicing doctor in the city, apparently. And she concludes that Ryuji was slipping Kaneda light activated poison in his whiskey from apparently there's a plant that Ryuji wrote a thesis on that secretes a poison that is activated by bright lights, and so the studio lights activated the poison and the lights going down was just a distraction, and then the like poison choked him to death. So while Asakawa and Ryuji are talking about the tape, first of all, Asakawa gets a phone call saying that they looked in whoever he was talking with, the TV studio guys, looked into the pirate broadcasts that were going on, and there was apparently no pirate broadcast recorded at the same time as that music video was broadcast, so that avenue of investigation is dead. And as this happens, the cops show up to arrest Ryuji. While Asakawa is there, which again, he's starting to look like circumstantially involved and really suspicious in two de deaths now.
Yeah, it did. Well, I mean, maybe they just did show it because, like, it wouldn't be interesting. But it does give the impression in the show that they just let Asakawa go without asking any questions while they came to arrest this man for murder.
The cops show up, and he's just like, oh, you're arresting me, but when you find out what really happened, you will be ashamed of your words and deeds. And Mai watches him get arrested on TV while eating chicken.
Gotta have a good meal.
Yeah, is there anything else? Oh, there's another bit with Mai where she has this music box that she lays like holes and listens to a lot, and at one point Ryuji picks it up and like tries to look at it himself, and she attacks him to get it back, I guess.
I don't know if there's anything else in the show, but we do also have a new segment that we're bringing into the show.
Oh yeah. I forgot this. Thank you. So there's a lot of random, like, small things, promotional bits and bobs and ephemera around this series. So we don't really have, we're not going to spend like an hour talking about any of these. So we're going to put little segments at the end of episodes. So the first one we wanted to talk about was like promotional CDs that came out for Ring 2, the movie.
There's two of these. There was Ring Infection and Ring Infestation, which very similar names.
I mean, are they similar in Japanese?
I'm not sure. I barely know any Japanese.
But yeah, the first one there. There seemed to be less detail on the second one. It may have just been like behind the scenes stuff. The first
Yeah,
one sounded more interesting.
Ring Infestation sounds like a pretty like straightforward just behind the scenes video. It talks like there's like behind the scenes like recording footage, and there's like interviews with staff and actors. Pretty standard, like bonus fare stuff. The interesting one here is Ring Infection.
Yeah, which seemed from there, I sadly could not get any, could not find any like video of this in action, but from descriptions appears to be a CD that you install on your computer. I believe it supported Windows and Mac. That like infects your computer with a fake computer virus for 7 days. That causes like random spooky events to happen on your computer for 7 days, which is just a very funny and cute way of doing a promotion.
I love the era when software like that existed, when like you could just
Just,
get a
yeah, just weird,
program.
weird experimental multimedia CDs.
I miss that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would love
Yeah,
to see
we
footage of it actually, like what happens when you run it, but was
Yeah,
not able to find any.
there's very little information on this, sadly, which is why it's an ephemera section instead of a full thing. The only sources we have for this are images of the back cover of them, and a machine translated article on the release of it,
Yeah.
and the web archive of the page of like the company that made the disc.
Yeah, this is also the kind of stuff where I'm just like, I'm not going to bother including it on the chart just because it would be that would just be like too much shit to throw on there, and I have to start making like a lot of decisions about like every tiny little thing of whether it goes on there or not. So I'm just drawing the line at like this kind of stuff either is not going to be on it.
It's quite cute too that both on the archive.org like website of the page, and like on the back of the disc, there's like a warning saying like we are not held responsible for any health problems caused by using this virus.
Yeah. it just makes me think of like standard boilerplate liability waivers, but for curses.
It's very fun. I wish there was like a copy of this that we could get and like run in a virtual machine or something. If anyone has any leads on this at all who's listening, let us know.
Any leads that aren't like spending €200 importing it from Japan? Yeah, I
Mean,
have a
hell, if it's like for like a reasonable price somehow, I would be willing to pay to get this.
Oh, well, we know this because you've spent money importing something much worse and stupider.
That's true, and maybe you'll find out about that on a later ephemera section, listener.
Yeah, well, I think we have to get to that point where we talk about the where we get to talk about the American side of the series first before we get to
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, we'll get that segment on the one piece of like ring of media I have brought with my own money when it becomes relevant with the American movies.
Oh God, okay. Thank you for listening. If you want to see the chart, you'll be able to
The
find
chart.
it on episode pages for the podcast at oakreef.ie/ring, oakreef.ie/ring.
Bye.
Bye.